Well, it's good to see your campaign headquarters here. And I know that it was a hard decision to quit the job that you really liked, which was head of Enlace, and run for this office. And so I wondered what the process was.
Well, I loved my job at Enlace Comunitario, as you said, and I was minding my own business until the president of the United States was selected by the Electoral College, and I use that. What I mean to say is the Electoral College selected him. And immediately things started changing. Right after he was sworn in, ICE started showing up in the courthouses here in New Mexico. And what was happening was our clients, his new policies just caused such fear in the community. And our clients were afraid to go to the courthouses. They were afraid to get their restraining orders that they needed, and they were even afraid to testify at the civil and criminal trials of their abusers. So I organized the sexual assault and the domestic violence agencies throughout the state, and we asked the New Mexico Supreme Court to stop letting ICE detain people at the courthouses because of the fear it was causing our clients.
Let me interrupt you for a minute, because I think we need to say that your clients are victims of domestic violence.
Yes.
Or were.
Thank you for contextualizing. Yes.
Victims of domestic violence and often immigrants.
Well, our target outreach was the Latino immigrant community because we were a bilingual bicultural agency.
Okay. Say what ICE is, just to let people know.
Oh, thank you. ICE is the Immigration Customs and Enforcement Officers. Immigration Customs and Enforcement. And so what they were doing, these officers were doing, is they were just showing up at the courthouse to pick people up. And it was very, very frightening for the community. In fact, the first week after he was sworn in, there were 10 appointments that we had in the office, and only 3 showed up. And when we called and we asked why, and they said it was fear. And the words they used was, no me quiero meterme en problemas, which means I don't want to cause problems, I don't want to get involved. And that was a huge concern. So as I mentioned, I got the domestic violence and the sexual assault agencies organized, and we asked the court to stop letting ICE detain people at the courthouses. And that got attention. Radio stations, the television covered it, the newspaper covered it, and people started asking me to run for Michelle Lujan Grisham's seat. And I literally said at first, are you kidding me? I'm too busy to run for office. And I resisted. Until I got a call from a former student who said to me, Professor, we need your brains in Congress right now. We need somebody who has a deep understanding of the Constitution and someone who knows how government should work, because we have a crisis with this White House. And that's the argument that got me off the sidelines and running for this seat.
Maybe we should go back a little bit now and say what you have done before Enlace, because you mentioned being a professor, and you and I met when you were practicing law at Madrill mm-hmm. Law Firm years and years ago.
Yes, I taught at the law school for 27 years. And 8 of them, I was associate dean for our clinical programs, and I was able to build clinics that continue to serve the needs of our community today. So I'm very proud of that work. Mm-hmm. We started to fight the failures of our criminal justice system. We started an Innocence and Justice Project. When families were losing their homes, we started an economic justice clinic to help families fight predatory economic activity. And we started an environmental clinic because we live in the desert, and we have such a fragile environment, particularly when it comes to water. So those are the kinds of clinics that I was able to build, and I'm very excited and pleased about the work, because what I think it shows is my deep, deep involvement with the community here in Albuquerque and throughout the state. We started the Southwest Indian Law Clinic, which is a statewide clinic, mm-hmm. and even goes beyond the borders.
And as I remember, the law school's really known for the kind of practical work that you can get, because that isn't always true in law schools.
That's absolutely right. Our clinical programs at one point were ranked 4th in the country. It was really exciting.
Great, great. But before that, you did have some time practicing law before you started teaching?
Well, to give you my little trajectory, and you've probably heard that story, I allude to it in my ad. Yeah. I had an interest in law at a very young age. I actually had the opportunity to meet the district attorney of Valencia County, and I was really impressed by him. So I formed the idea that I wanted to go to law school. And so I went to my guidance counselor, and I mentioned that I was interested in law. And he said, that is great, Antoinette, because you're so smart. You'll make a great legal secretary. Now, there is nothing wrong with being a legal secretary. It's just not what I wanted to do. And so I went to the University of New Mexico, graduated, went to UCLA Law School, and then I was privileged to clerk for the D.C. Circuit in Washington, D.C. And then, as you mentioned, I had the opportunity to come home, and I practiced law with the Amato firm for 3 years. And then I was another wonderful opportunity to teach at the law school, and I taught for 27 years. Okay.
You and I have been on a lot of committees together, have worked on a lot of projects together. You strike me as a gracious sort of person. I can't imagine you arguing a lot with people or fighting with people.
You know, I don't know if you've heard. So I have been told that, and this was the comment, is you're too nice to be in Congress. The first time it happened, I took a deep breath and I said, you know, thank you, because my parents raised me to be polite and kind. And I believe that politeness and kindness are New Mexican values. But I don't think you have to be an asshole to be effective. And I am very effective. That's why I was able to build clinics. And I really don't believe that you have to be abrasive or harsh. But I think that you have to be strong. And I am a very strong and determined person. My aunt says my high school counselor didn't hold me back. And when people try to hold me back, I don't like that, and I fight against it. Mm-hmm. And I have been very effective in my life, and I know that I can be a very effective congresswoman.
Okay. You've worked on campaigns before because you've helped your husband, who has run for judge and is currently a judge. But it strikes me that this is a different kind of campaign. Can you characterize the difference between them?
Well, I've always kind of been in the background, helping people from behind the scenes and working on different campaigns from behind the scenes. It is really interesting to be the candidate. And there's a lot of positive. I was joking with someone that said, maybe if I would have known how fun it is, I might have done this earlier in my life. Because I really like the forums. I love the educational process. It's people, it's policy, it's law, it's the opportunity to make a difference. Those are things I've always wanted to do. I really have enjoyed it. But that also has the negative side. It's kind of on you. Mm. And so, you know, the buck stops with you no matter what happens. Mm. It's exciting, but it's also kind of scary sometimes. Mm. And it's different. This one is very different because the district is so big. Most of the campaigns I've been involved in, well, not all of them, but this one just seems bigger than anything I've been involved in. It may be because I have the bird's eye view of it, mm-hmm. but it just seems very big.
Mm-hmm. Have you been contacted from people in Washington?
I have been endorsed by members of Congress, and that's fantastic. But the process is more, I meet with them and I talk to them about what I'm interested in. They share with me what they're interested in, and I ask for their endorsement. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that Washington people have contacted me and really reached out to me. It's more me reaching out to them.
Okay. One thing that I thought might have happened is that Nancy Pelosi might have been in contact with you looking for your vote, but maybe it's too early for that.
No, she hasn't. That would mean that she thought I was going to win. I haven't. I don't think that, I'm not sure if that happens, but nothing like that has happened to me.
Okay. What about groups that have decided to endorse you? Can you sort of run through some of them?
Well, I was really honored to get the Justice Democrats endorsement really early on. And the Justice Democrats endorsement meant so much to me because it is a group of former Bernie staffers who are interested in turning the House blue, but not just with any old Democrat, but with progressives. And so when they endorsed me, it just meant the world to me. And they're a very supportive group of people. And it's been great. And then, of course, I've got the Building Trades Union's endorsement. That was huge. Mm-hmm. And Latino Victory Fund and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus just endorsed me last week. Oh. And that was another real huge honor to have those endorsements.
Let's talk about some of the issues that you have been involved in that you would want to continue.
Well, as you know, one of the clinics we started at the law school was the Environmental Justice Clinic. And that kind of grew out. I was on the Air Quality Control Board in the 90s. I don't know if you remember that Albuquerque brown cloud. It was a wonderful example of the federal government, the state government, and the local governments working well together, because the EPA had its guidelines, and they worked with the Environmental Department at the state. And we passed things like the particulate regulation, the no burn days, the emissions from cars. And you wouldn't expect the federal government to be doing that. You'd want the local government to be doing that. And we were able to do that. And I'm really pleased because I don't know if you remember that brown cloud. It was pretty much there all winter. And now it's a rare thing to see now. Mm-hmm. And that was great. And we live in a desert. So water is very precious and important. And so we were able to work on water issues, both water quality and water quantity issues. And now that we're going to have this really severe drought this summer, I think about how important those issues are. And I look at our state, and there are several problems. That we've got the problem of the environment and the water, but we also have an employment problem. Mm. So one of the bills that I support is the 21st Century New Deal for Jobs Act. And what's exciting about that bill is it is infrastructure development and rebuilding, but it's beyond roads and bridges. It is about moving us toward a new energy economy. So the kinds of things that we can do with it would be transmission lines for solar and for wind. And we could also work on infrastructure for our water problems. We could maybe use it to do drip irrigation instead of flood irrigation. We could use it maybe to have more reuse of the water so that we can put it back into the system so that it can be reused many times along the way as it goes into Texas and Mexico. That's an example of work that I did at the law school that I'd like to see continued. The other thing that I am really passionate about is Medicare for All. And it's because, well, I believe that healthcare is a human right. And I have been involved with so many people who don't have access to healthcare. And I have also heard so many healthcare horror stories. And I have my own healthcare horror story. My father died of cancer. And when that happened, he ate into a $1 million cap. And after that, my mother had to look at selling property in order to get his chemo treatment. Mm. And so story after story of healthcare made me launch my campaign with trying to advocate for and push Medicare for All. Because like I said, healthcare is a human right, and you shouldn't have to be employed or have money to have access to healthcare. Okay.
We found out from Michelle that wielding power in Washington and in such a big body as Congress is a really difficult and a different kind of enterprise mm-hmm. than it is in New Mexico. So have you been thinking in terms of what committees you might want to be on or who you might want to work with, who you might want to ally with?
Yes, I will be very active with the Hispanic Caucus, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, as well as the Progressive Caucus, as well as the Women's Caucus, as well as the Labor Caucus. And I was even joking with one of the persons who endorsed me, Jamie Raskin, who's a former law professor turned congressman, that we need a caucus for law professors because there's so many constitutional issues that are coming out of this administration. And it's true. I actually had a former student, come up to me about a month and a half ago, and he said, "Professor, we never talked about what would happen if the president didn't follow the Constitution." And I said to him, now that I'm running for office, I see in a very clear way that I didn't see before, that checks and balances are not constitutional law issues. Checks and balances are purely political issues. And unless we take back the House, unless we take back the Senate, this president will have no consequence. And that's how we police the Constitution. There is no other group. Yes, the courts do, and that's really important to have that check. Right now, we have Republicans who are either complicit with this administration, or they're quitting, or in Ryan's case, both. Mm-hmm. And so I really think that that's going to be a big occupation of Congress when we flip the House and Democrats are in charge, will be really being the check and balance on this president, which is absolutely necessary right now.
So do you think that laws can be passed that will change some of the things that will make them more institutional rather than just something that people expect to happen?
Well, the thing is to be honest, the president, the only way that the Congress can delegate power to the president, and they have done that with the authorization for the use of force, mm-hmm. because the war powers, as you know, belong to Congress. And so every time they delegate power to the president. And I actually think they need to take some of that power back. Because when you have someone who's as unstable as we have now with this president, it's very scary to think that someone like that could actually start a war without getting the authorization necessary from Congress. And so right now, there is a bill that I think would be really important, and that is a bill prohibiting the president from using a first strike nuclear force. And I have written about that, and I think it's really important, because I don't think this president or any president should initiate a nuclear war without getting the consent of the representatives of the people. Okay. And so that's an example of sort of the power balance between the president and the congressional branch.
So you would work with that if you were in office?
Yes, I absolutely would.
Okay. Let's talk about women running for office and women having power in office. I think that we may start thinking of this position as a woman's seat, since it started with Heather Wilson and has been a woman's seat since then.
I like that. I like the idea of there being a woman's seat, because I think it would be really disturbing to have a delegation that had no women. A delegation of five from New Mexico with no women would really concern me. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea that we would at least have one woman's seat. You know, Rebecca Traister wrote an article in New York Magazine in which she compared women who were inspired to run after the Anita Hill hearings with women who were inspired to run now. And I'm one of the women she profiled. Oh. And what she saw was in common was after the Anita Hill, women didn't like seeing the Senate committee taking Anita Hill to task, and none of the questions that were on women's minds were asked by the Senate of Clarence Thomas or anybody who was testifying. And so the women were angry and they decided to run. And now I don't imagine that you'd have a congressional hearing that wouldn't have at least one woman on it. And now what the article talked about are stories like mine, where we saw what the policies of this president meant to our communities, and we stood up and decided to stand up against those policies. And I have to tell you, it does feel good and empowering to stand up against the policies instead of feeling victimized by them.
What about, though, I think that a lot of the criticism of Nancy Pelosi, for instance, is because of the power that she's achieved and the length of the time that she has been able to wield that power. But, you know, you are putting yourself out there.
Well, I do notice, yes, when women put themselves out there, I think it is an act of courage, because we're not used to being so reviewed and so criticized. And, you know, my glasses have been criticized, my hair has been criticized. And, you know, and I just decided, look, I am who I am, and I'm offering myself up there. But I don't notice that, you know, if a male candidate wears the same suit five times in a row, that there's any kind of criticism of that. I don't think people even notice. Well, you remember that Hillary's clothes were criticized, Hillary's ankles were criticized. It was just ridiculous. And I think we have to move beyond that and look to a woman's policy ideas, a woman's history, a woman's effectiveness, a woman's track record, and not what she looked like.
Okay. You've actually been criticized because you wore the same suit too often?
Let's just say I've received commentary on my clothing. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you can say that you don't think women should be criticized, but you can't stop it. It's
right.
Going to happen. So are you really, at this point in your life, are you willing to put up with that sort of thing?
Well, you know, when you get to this point in life, you just don't care. I mean, it's ridiculous. I wear glasses, big deal. You know, yeah, I don't have the best hair, but who cares? It's just, you know, I just really, at this point, I'm more interested in people's ideas and their philosophies, and I'm more interested in presenting my ideas and my strengths and offer them. That's what I offer.
Let's talk a little bit about some women's issues besides the environment.
Well, I, of course, as you've known, all of my career, I've been pro-choice and absolutely aligned with pro-choice positions. I feel very strongly that I was talking about choice in the 80s before it was part of the Democratic platform, that it is very important that a woman have control over her body. It's important for autonomy. One of the things that in Lhasa that I saw that was really sad was one forms of controlling women was keeping a woman pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that just... it's really sad to see that pregnancy could be used as a means of power and control. And so I've been pro-choice all of my career and will continue to be. And then you asked about childcare. Mm-hmm. I definitely think we should offer paid or low-cost childcare to women, because it is another barrier to women's success, is not having access to childcare. We used to offer that in Lhasa. We offered on-site childcare. Mm-hmm. It made all the difference in the world for our employees, men and women.
Now I'm talking to Victor Lopez, who's Antoinette's son and has worked on many campaigns. So tell me what your involvement is with this campaign, and were you behind her decision to run?
My mom called me last spring and told me that she was considering running for Congress, and I was really excited because all the campaigns I've ever worked on have been successful because I've been working for the most qualified and best candidate. And so I was really excited about this one because...
Were you surprised to hear that she was thinking about it and that she made that decision?
I was surprised that she decided to run for Congress, because I had been urging her for a few years during our weekly breakfast meetings to run for something, like state house is what I was thinking. But when she told me about her intentions to run for Congress, everything clicked. It made complete sense. It's definitely the highest and best use of her skills.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is this the only campaign you're working on this cycle, or are you working on others too?
Yeah, so in the past I worked with Cynthia Hall, who is now our PRC commissioner for this district, Christine Trujillo, who is a state representative, and my dad's campaign, actually. He's a district court judge. Yeah, but right now Antoinette for Congress is the only campaign that I'm devoted to.
Okay.
You know, voters are really engaged these days. They do their research, and they're seeing that Antoinette Cedillo Lopez has the legal expertise, the national scholarship, and the community involvement and connectedness that I think a congresswoman should have.
Okay. What do you want her to do once, if she's elected? What do you want her to accomplish, or what changes do you want her to make?
I'm just really excited to see how she handles Congress. I think she's going to be a really strong national voice for not only our district, but for progressive values and for moving us forward. I think she's really going to add to the brain trust in Washington, D.C.
Okay, good. You have another sort of passion. Tell a little bit about that, about your work with kids and chess.
So chess is actually a really great game for kids to learn, as I think most people can agree. And so actually this story is connected to my mom. She helped me when I was a kid run the Bandelier Elementary School Chess Club. And then about 7 years ago, she helped me start a nonprofit organization called Learners Chess Academy. We do after-school chess clubs and summer chess camps around Albuquerque and Rio Rancho with about 1,500 kids per year. Kids these days are really getting used to acting very impulsively with their smartphones or their video games. And so for us, it's all about thinking before you act, thinking before you move. And so it's such a good game because it really provides a venue for a mentor to stand over a kid's shoulder while they play chess and really coach them through the process of considering multiple possible avenues and the consequences of what they might do, and really consider things before they act on them. It's the absolute perfect game to do something like that with kids and teach them to think.
Can you talk about successes that you've had?
We've had a ton of kids who've really blossomed through our program. We went on a service trip to El Salvador and taught a group of kids out in the jungle how to play chess, about 36 kids, and not just chess, but chess as a tool for development and leadership development can do.
Okay. Are you happy with the way the campaign's going?
Oh yeah, I'm really happy. I mean, it's most encouraging for our community and in our district that voters are so engaged with the race that they're able to see somebody who is not a political insider, who they never knew about before, is such a qualified candidate. And yeah, it really it makes me encouraged for the future of our community.
Thank you. You can see I'm very proud of him.
Thank you.